meeting. We're going to have one item for discussion today, that's the adoption policy of that's the implementation of adoption policy framework and statute by the Department of Social Development. Any apologies, committee secretary?
Yes, Chairperson, there are a couple of apologies. One is from the Minister of the Department, who is unable to be with us. She's accompanying the... she's in a presidential visit at El Dorado Park in Gauteng. Also in that visit, the Deputy Minister and the DG of the Department, three of them are in that presidential visit. Another one is from Honourable Emma More. She won't be with us today. She's also attending a workshop in PE. So those are the two apologies I've received so far. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Members, Honourable Committee Secretary. I'm going to give over to the Department of Social Development just to introduce the delegation, and then you can go right into the presentation. Please excuse my voice, I've got a bit of a cold.
Good morning. Good morning, Chair, and good morning to members of the Portfolio Committee on Social Development. My name is Wiseman Magafela. I'm here today representing the Director General of the Department of Social Development, who is not able to be with us here today because of an engagement. The Director General, Mr. Kwetsego Phakade, and Ms. Connie Nxumalo, who is the Deputy Director General responsible for welfare services in the department, they are both accompanying the President of the country, the Minister of Social Development, the Deputy Minister of Social Development, and they have gone to El Dorado Park in Gauteng on a very, very important outreach program, which is on drugs and substance abuse in that particular area. Accompanying me here from the Department of Social Development, I have Ms. Margot Davids, who is going to be taking us through the presentation on adoption by the department, and she is the chief director responsible for children in the department. With her, accompanying her as well, is Ms. Kinsley Rasibidze, who is the director responsible for adoptions and international social services, and is also our chief director legal services in the department, Mr. Buselizwe Luselo, and we have also the Chief Director in the Office of the Director General, Mr. Mzo Fugula. Now, Chair, we were asked to come and, I have my apologies, Chair. I have also Ms. Ingrid Ndlovu here from the Office of the Minister. Chair, just in short, really, as some kind of introductory remark, if you look at our country, particularly if you look at our history as a South African society, we currently have millions of children in South Africa that are vulnerable because of their social and economic circumstances. We've got high numbers of children that are orphans. We have children that are living under circumstances that are not really suited for the well-being of children. We have as well, quite very well established in this country, the disintegration of the family as we know it. So there are many specific challenges that we face as a country, particularly when it comes to children. Now, within that context, as a Department of Social Development, there are many policy interventions that we do have, many programs and specific activities that we have in addressing this particular circumstance in the country. One of them is obviously adoption. So when we look at adoption as one, we have to look at adoption as one part, as one element in our overall approaches in terms of addressing the plight of our children in South Africa. Under the circumstances that I've outlined, adoption therefore becomes an important policy solution as a country. Also quite important, because we would want the portfolio committee to assist us in this regard as well, it's the appreciation that adoption as a solution to a vulnerable child circumstance provides a permanent, stable, lifelong solution for a child that has been placed in that way. Also quite important as well to keep very, very uppermost in our considerations are really the interests of the child and the sorts of mechanisms that the department puts in place to ensure that children that are adopted, they have their interests taken care of and they are also quite protected. And just to preempt this, because it's something, Chair and members of the Portfolio Committee, that we need your guidance on. And it really has to do with the fact that currently, as we speak, there are incentives and disincentives when it comes to adoptions, particularly when one looks at the issue of the foster care grant. Now, the foster care grant, which is growing in South Africa, has to be looked in the context of the currently that if, when you adopt a child, there isn't any financial or support incentive that you get as a parent. So those are the sorts of things really that we would like the committee to assist us in deliberating on and in discussing. So to lead us, please, with the presentation is Ms. Margot Davids, and then after that, Chair, we will then engage in a discussion on the matters that we have been raised. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chair. I'm going to do the presentation on the implementation of adoption policy framework and strategy. Basically, that's the overview of the presentation and the different areas that I'll be touching on. I'm not going to go through them. The purpose is to provide a briefing on the implementation of adoption policy framework and strategy. Adoption is a very regulated, legislated environment, and as you can see, it has there are many pieces of legislation that impact on adoption at a national level as well as at the international level. But I think for us, really, the main pieces of legislation is the Constitution and the Children's Act that we work with. And at the international legislation, it is regarding the UN Conventions on the Rights of the Child and the Hague Convention on the Protection of Children and Co-respect of Intercountry.
I just want to add something that I just remembered while you were speaking. Could you also add to us there was two matters that was in the public domain. One, the issue of the adoption that was advertised on Gumtree. I think there was another matter where the mother was still pregnant and she was basically selling her baby. Just what are the implications thereof? Those kind of, because it's not the second time that it's actually being done, that people actually pick it up. That South Africans are actually doing this. You know? So the human trafficking issue vis-a-vis adoption.
And as the chairperson says, I think those are the cases that are coming to the fore, is about the sale of children and being put up through an adoption guise. And I think we will answer that. I did see something in the act just now. I'm sorry, I'll have to go back if you don't mind and deal with that. Besides the legislative framework, we also have the rights of the child in internal and inter-country adoption, ethics and principles, guidelines for practice, and this is really meant to guide the practice of adoptions with social workers. The second one is guidelines for practice on national and inter-country adoption and foster family care using the Swedish model.
and also Guide to Good Practice under the Hague Convention on the Protection of Children and Cooperation in Respect of Intercountry Adoption. Adoption for us is really a traditional method of care in the field of child protection. It has for many years been regarded the most effective means of providing a permanent and stable family in life for orphaned and vulnerable children. It is a placement of a child in a permanent alternative care of a person who is not his or her biological parent or permanent guardian. The main purpose of adoption is to protect and nurture children by providing a safe, healthy environment with positive support and to promote the goals of permanency planning by connecting children to other safe and nurturing family relationships intended to last a lifetime. Adoption is one of the statutory services rendered to children who are in need of care and protection. And due to different circumstances in their lives, they've got no prospects of reuniting them with their families of origin. Therefore, placing them with stable and loving families through adoption may be considered the best option for them. Adoption is a legal process facilitated through the children's court by an adoption social worker and a presiding officer. There are strict legal procedures which terminate the parental rights, responsibilities and rights of biological parents or guardians over a child and vest those responsibilities and rights in other persons, namely the adoptive parents. Adoption of a child has the same legal status to that of a biological family in that it assures the child to be part of an adoptive family in a continuous relationship with their family members long after their 18th birthday. And unlike other forms of alternative care, where after 18 the legal responsibilities are then terminated between state and that, or between the foster parent or the child and youth care center and the child. The process of adoption, the child's circumstances must be investigated by adoption social worker to determine if he or she is adoptable. The circumstances of the person wishing to adopt the child must be investigated to ensure the person meets the requirements as a prospective adoptive parent according to the children's legislation. And thirdly, the biological parents or guardian of the child, if available, and if the child, if over 10 years above, must sign legal consent for the adoption of the children as the children's court may require before the adoption is finalized and the court order granted. The effects of the adoption order. The adoption order brings about a situation in which a child becomes the child of the new parent and the legal ties that the child had with any member of his family or his family of origin ceases to exist. The adoption order has the effect of seizing all parental responsibilities and rights of the biological parent and transferring those responsibilities and rights to the adoptive parents. The adopted child must, for all purposes, be regarded as the child of the adoptive parents. The child is entitled to take the surname of the adoptive parents unless otherwise ordered by the court. The child's right to any property acquired before the adoption remains in place. The requirements. The prospective adoptive parent who wishes to adopt a child must meet the following requirements. He or she must be fit and proper person to be entrusted with the full parental rights and responsibilities towards the child, willing to undertake, exercise and maintain those responsibilities and rights, must be over the age of 18 and must be properly assessed by an adoption social worker to determine his or her suitability. We have two programs that we run under adoption. The first being the National Adoption Program, in which Chapter 15 deals with national adoptions and Chapter 16 of the Children's Act deals with intercountry adoption. The National Adoption Program entails placement of the child locally. And these are the following elements for the implementation of the National Adoption Program. Our Register on Adoptable Children and Prospective Adoptive Parents, RACAP, in terms of Section 32 of the Children's Act, 32 of 2005, it requires that the DG keeps and maintains a register for the purpose of keeping a record of adoptable children and a record of fit and proper adoptive parents. The register assists to facilitate the matching of the available prospective adoptive parents and adoptable children in South Africa. These are the annual figures that were presently since we've begun the register. 2011-2012, there were 456 adoptable children registered, 111 prospective adoptive parents registered. As you are, as you can see, in 2012-13, this has increased to 508 adoptable children registered and 237 prospective adoptive parents registered on the register. The adoption register, the national adoption register, section 247 makes provision for the adoption register to record information pertaining to adoption centers and for the department to keep the register. Some of the statistics on adoption registered is as follows, and I'll just go to the last figures from, or rather from 2010 to 31st of March. There were 2,236 adoptions, national adoptions. 2011 to 2012, 1,619 national adoptions, and 2012 to 2013, 1,522 national adoptions. As part of encouraging and promoting the awareness on adoption services, the department has embarked on community and stakeholder dialogue, and we're hoping that by so doing, we'll get more prospective adoptive parents coming forward, and also for other people to understand what adoption services can actually do. We've also had 5 community dialogues conducted in the Eastern Cape, Northwest, Mpumalanga, Free State, and Limpopo. We've also had stakeholder dialogues with the National House of Traditional Leaders, the Free State Provincial House of Traditional Leaders, and the Northwest Council of Churches. And this process is ongoing. Partnership with the National Adoption Coalition has also been established. We've had last year, October, a national workshop on adoption conducted with adoption stakeholders. We've also ensured that promotional material has been developed in different languages and distributed to communities. Radio interviews have been conducted in various radio stations to promote adoption services, and we've had other newspaper and magazine articles which have been placed in promoting adoption services. The Act also makes a provision for accreditation of adoption service providers. Section 51 makes provision for the DG to accredit and keep the Register of Adoption Social Workers in private and child protection organizations to perform adoption services. We've had a total number of adoption service providers accredited is 84. We've accredited 42 adoption social workers in private practice, and we've accredited 42 child protection organizations specializing in adoption services and doing other things, but one of the aspects is definitely a specialty in adoption. Capacity building. We've had capacity building conducted in provinces with adoption stakeholders in all 9 provinces. And it just gives you the dates where we've completed that. In terms of international adoption, I'll take it again from about 2010. In 2010, 2011, with the change of the new Act, we had 2,000 inter-country adoptions completed. In 2011-2012, 198, and 2012-2013, 177 international inter-country adoptions. Types of adoption. There are various types of adoption. Disclosed or open adoption. A disclosed or open adoption is adoption where the person giving up the child for adoption knows the person or wishes to adopt his or her child. The details and identity may be disclosed to the prospective adoptive parents and vice versa. These are mainly family-related or step-parent adoptions. Non-disclosed or closed adoption is where there's no disclosure of identity and personal details of the biological parents or guardians of the child and the prospective adoptive parents. There's no contact or communication among the parties. Then there's different types of family types. The biological adoption. Adoption of a child by his biological father who was not married to the child's mother when the child was born. Family adoption. Adoption of a child by relatives. For example, uncle, aunt, grandparents, etc. The foster adoption. Adoption of a child by a foster parent or a person who is legally fostered the child. and the step adoption, adoption of a stepchild by a step-parent. Inter-country adoption program. This entails the placement of children across countries. South Africa has acceded to the Hague Convention on Inter-Country Adoption on the 1st of December 2003. The DG for Department of Social Development is represented the central authority for inter-country adoptions in terms of Section 27. Can we please just say it is 257 as a correction? Accreditation. Section 259 makes provision for the DG to accredit and keep the register of the child protection organizations to perform inter-country adoption services. The number of child protection organizations who have been accredited for inter-country adoption are 10. We've also conducted capacity building on the process in the various provinces on inter-country adoption. And once again, it will state what the provinces that we've been to. The practice guidelines on inter-country adoption, as I said earlier, is used really to provide a basis of how to do adoptions, especially for social workers. And it has broadened to include the option on inter-country adoption. A good quality level of inter-country adoption services and practice is therefore needed to ensure the best interests of the child or cannot be placed into suitable care locally are addressed in this manner. Guidelines are required to ensure that the inter-country adoption practice in South Africa adheres to internationally recognized standards, prevents or deters the sale, trafficking, and abduction of a child, improves service delivery through appropriate training, and it serves as a guide to the central authority and the accredited child protection organization and other professionals working directly or indirectly with children. It forms the basis for monitoring assessments, monitoring and evaluation of inter-country adoption services in South Africa. And I think this has been a repetition, I've already dealt with that. Children adopted in foreign countries. What we've put out here is just for the committee to be aware of the type of countries we're dealing with and the numbers of children being adopted in the foreign countries from 2010 up to 2013. I'm not going to go through all of them, just to state that that is the breakdown of the 177. The main recipients are within the Scandinavian countries. The working agreement, Section 260 makes provision for accredited CPOs to enter into working agreements with an accredited adoption agency in a foreign country. The following are countries that South Africa's central authority has working agreements with in terms of inter-country adoption. And they range mainly from the Netherlands, Sweden, Germany, Finland, and it goes right through to Canada. The impact of Children's Act on adoption. Permanency planning for children who are adoptable have been given opportunities for placement. Adoption service providers are accredited by DSC to render quality services. The RACAP promotes and facilitates the placement of children. Integrated and coordinated promotion of adoption services. And I think this has been one of the major impacts because adoption tended to be very much money-driven and now there is a much more collaborative work between the different adoption service providers. A child who cannot be placed locally afforded permanency placement internationally and the placements of children internationally are monitored through aftercare services. And I think that has been also a major change in the Children's Act coming into operation. Some of the challenges. Adoption as a placement option has been widely underutilized in South Africa, as most children are being placed into foster care due to the foster care grant. The barriers preventing people from adopting children, such as socio-cultural obstacles within different communities, obstacles from service providers, and the legal and judicial system due to limited knowledge and interpretation and application of the Act. Absence of dedicated and specialized adoption units in provinces, and this is mainly in the state department. Insufficient networking among adoption service providers, insufficient information and community awareness about adoption. Social workers from the Department of Social Development are not accredited to provide adoption services in terms of Section 251 of the Children's Act and are not recognized as adoption social workers. Therefore, they are not permitted to present and finalize adoption cases in some of the children's courts. And finally, inaccessible adoption services in unresourced rural areas due to insufficient adoption service providers. Monitoring and evaluations in the process to ensure compliance with the Children's Act, the Hague Convention on the Protection of Children in respect of intercountry adoption, adherence to the accreditation requirements and working agreements with foreign countries, and also we've conducted on-site visits and have conducted four monitoring and evaluation visits to four accredited CPOs. Some of the things that we want to do going forward: continued promotion of adoption service to view adoption as an option for permanent placement for children, where government social workers have been omitted in the definition of an adoption social worker. A proposal is made to amend the Children's Act to include social workers in employment of government. Dealing with cultural barriers that prevent people from adopting children. Continued capacity building of service providers. Continuous engagement with relevant stakeholders in the interpretation and application of the Act. Continuous engagement with provincial departments regarding the establishment of dedicated units for adoption, and encouraging service providers to establish networking forums. In recommendation, it is recommended that the Portfolio Committee on Social Development takes note of the implementation of the adoption policy framework and strategy. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mrs. David, for that presentation. I think it gives other members of the Portfolio Committee a clear picture of what is adoption all about and the different options available, but also categorizing. You know, so just before I give over to members, if you can just note this question. If you could tell us, and I'm sure this is also the International Social Work is busy with that, is the fact that some of our South Africans, our fellow countrymen and women, are imprisoned in foreign jails. And then they have minor children that is in need of care and support. So what kind of service do you provide to them? You know, I would like to know that. I don't know whether you can answer that now, but if you can, then it's wonderful. I can't recall that you actually responded to the country issue that I raised. Can you do it now in your response? Okay, that's good. Because I think somehow there should be some, I know that social development is involved in doing some inquiries and investigation, but I think there should be some strong message from the minister around this issue, as well as the Minister of Justice. Because if it's appearing twice, it means it's going to become a phenomenon. maybe it would also be appropriate time for us to, as South African, just reflect on the issue of adoption. Maybe communication from the minister in this regard on options available to people. Let me stop there and then I'll give over to the Honourable Members. Honourable Mafulo, Honourable Ngobeni Maluleka, Honourable Waters, Honourable Bula. In that order, please. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me welcome the presentation. Thank you, Mr. Davis, for this informative presentation. My question is, we have an international agreement with other countries. Do we only rely on those agreements after giving the child? We, as the South African that have given the child, don't do follow-ups. How is the well-being of the child that side? Another question is, do we have some South Africans who adopt from other countries, or they are only, we are the only country giving to other countries children? If so, and then did you ever get challenges after giving children for adoption? Did you ever get challenges of maybe the child was not well taken off. And those international countries, I'm only interested on them. Is it a non-disclosure or disclosure adoption, or does it apply both? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would like also to join my colleague in appreciating the presentation. My question is, I understand that the main goal is to ensure that the child is in a safe, nurturing family relationship that is intended to last a lifetime. So what if during the course of the child's upbringing, the child discovers that she is adopted and decides to look for the biological parent, whether it's a disclosed adoption or non-disclosed adoption, and particularly when the child has been taken abroad, then she or he decides to be reunited with the family because of some other reason. Maybe she feels she's not brought up the right way. Another question, I noticed some decline in adoption in both areas, nationally and internationally. I've heard when we were presenting other challenges, but to me, it doesn't answer why the decline, particularly in the year 2010 led up to 2013. Because even though there's this cultural background, but at a particular time, these adoptions were going well, but when the years went by, now there's a serious decline. What could be the cause of it? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, just on the issue on page 8 to do with adoptive social workers, it was first released, mentioned then, and then then on page 16, you say that there's 42 accredited adoption, social workers in the private practice. And then linked to that on page 26, you say that social workers that work for the department are not accredited to provide these services. Now, it's quite a chair for me that what we've been told today is only 42 social workers in the entire country, as far as I can see from these figures, that can actually do adoptions. And given the crisis facing country with the amount of children that are orphaned, one has to ask the department what took them so long to recognise this problem, first of all. I don't know if Mrs. Davies has taken this down. Are you with me? Okay. And what's taken so long for you to suggest, not propose, but suggest an amendment to the Children's Act in this regard? Where's the urgency around this? And I ask this in light of the fact that both international and local adoptions have been decreasing. In fact, local adoptions, I think, over the last 2 years have decreased by a third, from what I can figure it out. So what is taking you so long as a department to identify this issue, and why haven't you yet still done something about it, i.e. put in amendments to the Act? Thanks. And then just on some other issues, I mean, the decline in adoptions is very, very worrying. But just on other issues, you haven't talked once about children with special needs at all. I don't know if they need special mention or they just form part of a normal, a child without special needs as far as adoption is concerned. But in a reply to a parliamentary question, the minister did admit that there's no policy with regards to special needs children, that the department does not have a policy. Can you explain why this is? Do we need one? And if so, when will one be developed? And then as far as adoption programs between accredited agencies are concerned, specifically catering for children with challenges, why have some of these been rejected by the department? These are questions that I've asked in Parliament as well, specifically to do with Canada, but I mean there's other issues. I think Ireland was another one. But why have you rejected these specific programs? And then on discriminatory grounds, as you know, I think I've written to you before and to the minister with regards to some adoption agencies discriminating on the basis of marriage, sexual orientation, and religion. And the one big culprit, but they're not alone, is the ABBA agency, the international agency. And in fact, on their website of late, they still say that despite having interactions with you, they still say that marriage is one of the criteria, and that couples have to be married, have to cohabit at least 5 years, or be legally married for 1 year. Now, some people don't want to get married, right, it's their choice, and secondly, in some countries, for example, gay couples can't get married, and they want to adopt kids. So what are you doing about international communities, international organizations that discriminate?
Sorry, can I just ask Mr. Waters, just to go back, did you mention ABBA?
ABBA.
Is that what you mentioned?
Yeah, no, ABBA. Saying? The ABBA agency.
The ABBA agency.
They're not the pop group.
Okay.
Okay. And then, if you could just explain what's happening there, because our constitution, as you know, forbids discrimination on the basis of marriage, religion, or sexual orientation. And then as far as the register is concerned, I mean, I find it hard to believe that so few children, and maybe couples that want to adopt kids, I can maybe understand that only 237 couples in South Africa want to adopt kids. I find it hard to believe, but I can understand it maybe. But that there's only 508 adoptable children in the whole country. When, I mean, and I hate to bring up this report again, Chair, the costing of the Children's Act. At the back page, actually, the very back page, has a projection, done scientifically, of course, on the number of adopted of children that have lost the mother, the father, or double orphans, as they call them, in the report. And double orphans are hundreds and hundreds of thousands of kids, mainly due to the HIV pandemic. And I was just wondering, how do you juxtapose that to the 508 adopted children on the register that are up for adoption? Yes, I understand that some families, some gogos look after their grandkids and all that. So I'm not saying every child must be on their register, but surely it should be a lot higher than that. If you could just explain that, please. And then the register as well does not currently make provision for the data capture of each and every child who is adoptable and of each and every screened and eligible parent. Who is responsible for determining whether a child or not, or a parent, or a potential parent, actually is placed on the register? Which individual decides that, if you could tell us? Thank you very much, Jefferson.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think that Honourable Waters has set a mouthful, covered most of the areas. Chair, I just wanted to find out with regards to your legislation, your international legislation vis-à-vis the Child Act, and you've also indicated in terms of your challenges with regards to the specialised in provinces, the absence of specialized units. What are the challenges based around the correlation of these challenges? The challenges that we face around the issue of the children's courts. Jefferson, you remember in the oversight in KwaZulu-Natal, we found that we had tremendous challenges based on the issue of space and limited courts, etc. How are you addressing those kind of aspects? The other interesting part is that you have the foster care parents, and these children are in receipt of foster care grants, and reports reveal that many of these children are abused by foster parents. Those particularly at schools, etc. What counseling mechanism, you know, you have to deal consider these kind of aspects. The issue about, you've touched on the issue about the foster care grants. Now, once you might want to speed up the issue about the legislation and ensuring that a successful adoption takes place, how do you deal with the issues about, how do you merge the issues about the delays of the courts and also the absence of social workers, particularly some of the reasons, the negative impediments to finalize adoptions? Equally, you could not finalize a matter in court and not have the foster care grant sorted out. So the challenges in courts vis-a-vis the challenges of social workers at Department of Social, how do you deal with those aspects to ensure that a successful adoption takes place, keeping in line with your legislation, with the Child's Act, and with your international agreements, etc.? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thanks for the presentation. Chairperson, on page 14 and 15, it has been said that the promotion on awareness of the adoption services has been made. But when you look at the challenges, it comes up that there is insufficient networking among adoption services, as well as insufficient information on community awareness about adoption. I just want to find out that is there a problem particularly on a certain or specific set of community who doesn't understand or who doesn't want to agree with the process of adoption? If that is so, is there any plans maybe as part of challenges, as part of recommendations that might be put in place to say, what is that will be done to ensure that these communities are also clearly understand and see the need of the adoption?
Thanks, Chairperson. I'm happy that you can read my mind. I just wanted to know, in a case whereby a grandparent adopts a grandchild officially, then whereby after some years, the real parents will want to take the child back. Does the law protect the grandparents? And secondly, if what the other thing that is considered is that we have to be married, some grandparents will find that their partner has long gone, but I'm capable, I can raise a child, and I would like to raise my grandchild. So does the law allow me, even if my spouse has passed on? Thank you.
Thank you very much, honourable members, for those questions. Has anyone of you forgotten to ask something? Honourable Mafolo.
Thank you, Chair. You got dialogue from other provinces. Are you going to continue to the provinces that you didn't reach? The other thing is this thing that is happening, especially to us, when I adopt my sister's child, when I pass on, what is going to happen? Because sometimes I will just adopt her. Just my kid, and then when I die, my children started to chase her away. How do you protect such kids? I don't know if you understand me on that one, because sometimes I will take my sister's child. My sister passed on, and I take her child, and then after I pass on, my children don't even care about that. How do you protect the needs of that child? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. How do you deal with the challenge when a parent abandons a child, and this is arrives in the rural areas, and the child is left with the grandparents, and yet the child would not qualify for a foster care grant, and is left with the grandparents because you cannot find the biological parents?
apply for a child support grant because the parents, the grandparents will be the primary caregiver.
Not here, I appreciate that. I understand that. Chair, what I'm saying is that now the parents have abandoned the children. So while the child might qualify for child support grant, but now the child is in foster hands, and the grandparents are not categorized or won't be, it won't be a legitimate process for them to adopt the child.
To have a difference between the issue of kinship, because with kinship comes responsibility also because of family issues, and then the issue of foster care vis-a-vis the issue of grandparents. Honourable Waters?
No, Chair, thanks. Just on the issue of special needs, I mean, does the department have any stats as to the inter-country placement of children with special needs? You know, of those that have been placed last year, how many actually had special needs? And you know, is my assumption or my thinking correct that there are actually accredited adoption agencies in the country who have families screened for adoption who want to adopt children with challenges or special needs, let's put it that way, but who cannot facilitate such placements because the department has rejected or refused to endorse the inter-country adoption working agreement? Could you give us some indication of how many exist? Thank you.
Okay, over to you, Mr. Davis.
Yeah, thank you very much, Chair and members of the Portfolio Committee. In really all the issues that have been raised here, I think what we all need to appreciate is that these children who find themselves in these vulnerable circumstances, and as we did indicate earlier, nearly in most of the instances, orphaned children, the special needs of the child are supreme. So whatever aspect on adoption that we are going to be responding to, which you have raised, the primary consideration has to be placed on that. It's not a process that you can shortcut or speed up or take in a manner that will in any way jeopardize the long-term and future interests of the child. Some of the questions that have been raised do relate to what one, for want of a better word, can just call particularly the practices that one finds in certain types of families, for instance, the extended family. We would like to differentiate, Chair, between what we would call the normal responsibilities that are attendant to arrangements and practices, particularly around taking responsibility that comes with part of being an extended family. I mean, there are families that their practices are primarily shaped by that, and the legal issue and process of a formal adoption. So even yourself, as members of the Portfolio Committee, whilst it's all well and good that people may adopt the child of a brother or of a sister, we need to be able to ask the question, what does that child gain, and what does the child lose in the absence of a legally binding adoption process? I mean, one honourable member raised the issue, for instance, of if she adopts the child of her sister and then she dies and her children chase the child away. Now, that can happen in an instance where there is the normal, traditional, cultural responsibility. But if it's a formal adoption, which is legal, therefore, there's recourse to law that is actually there. So we need also to look at, in instances of, say, established practices, particularly with extended families, what is it that a child loses under those arrangements, and what is it that a child gains or loses under a formal adoption, arrangement. And also the other question that was raised by Honourable Member Bulla, for instance, from a parent that abandoned the child, and then the grandmother finds herself looking after the child. There are millions of children under those circumstances in South Africa. If you look at the child support grant, the key restrictions of the child support grant are indeed grandparents. However, now we're seeing a move towards the foster care grant, because the decision that has been taken, a policy decision that's taken by the Department of Social Development, is that grandparents can qualify as foster care parents and therefore qualify for the child support grant. I will at this stage, please, Chair.
There's been a South Gauteng High Court decision that says parents, grandparents, have a responsibility to look after the grandchildren, to support them. So, aren't you the department looking at that? That's why I raised the issue of kinship. Because what the judge said, I think it was a lady judge, I don't know her name, that grandparents have a responsibility towards their grandchildren in terms of maintaining them and looking after them. That's why I raised the issue of kinship responsibility that they have. And if grandparents now become foster parents, doesn't that then contradicts the issue of kinship and the inherent responsibility that you have as a grandparent towards your grandchild? Is there any contradiction in that? And you have the legal advice, the legal person next to you.
Yeah, who was very much involved in that particular case, Honorable Chair, and I will ask him to clarify this matter for all of us. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Chair. Chair, there were two court cases relating to the same matter. The first matter was the Stemelo matter, and the subsequent one was the Malala. Now, in the first matter, when one dealing with the question as to who can qualify for foster care grant, particularly in relation to those who are closely related to a child, the court, before coming to a conclusion that the magistrate court had made a wrong decision, had to look at what is meant the reasonable means of support, because this is what needs to be taken into account before you decide on whether or not you grant the foster care order. Now, the court said when you look at whether or not the child has got the means, you also need to look at whether or not, as part of whether or the child's needs, whether or not there's someone who owes the child a common law duty of support. And then the court went on to say, to mention a number of people who would owe a child a common law duty of support, and that would be grandparents, your aunts, your biological parents, your sisters and brothers, that those would owe you a common law duty of support, and in particular, grandparent was also mentioned. But the court then said, it does not necessarily mean that if you owe a child a common law duty of support, you cannot apply for a foster care grant. But the interpretation of that judgment was such, by some, was such that it seems to preclude those who owe a child a common law duty of support from applying for a foster care grant in respect of that child. Although the court was clear on the fact that even if you know the whereabouts of the father, you can still go ahead and issue a foster care order, and also that the person who applied for the foster care grant placement receive a foster care grant in respect of that child. But then it was interpreted differently by some people. Then subsequently, there was another court case which dealt specifically with a grandparent who had been looking after a grandchild for some time. And then the question had to be determined whether or not the previous judgment was correct in its articulation of the common law duty of support. So the extent that that previous judgment was interpreted to mean that if you owe a child a common law duty of support, you cannot apply for a foster care grant in respect of that child. The court said such an interpretation would be correct because the intention was not to exclude those who owe a child a common law duty of support from applying for a foster care grant in respect of that child. So the current legal position is that even if you owe a child a common law duty of support, and in particular if you are a grandparent, you would still qualify to apply for a foster care grant in respect of that child. But what is also important to say is that even if a foster care grant were to, a grandparent or any person for that matter were to owe a child a common law duty of support, you would still then have to ask, does this person have the means to maintain this child? For example, if it's a grandparent, then you need to say, does this grandparent have the means to maintain this grandchild? Now, the question, especially for those grandparents who are in the seat of an older person's grasp, the answer will be they can't even maintain themselves because that is why the state is maintaining them, and therefore they cannot maintain anyone else. So the correct interpretation is that you are not precluded from applying for a foster care grant in respect of a child, of a person, or a child you owe a common law duty of support. In fact, I think the only thing that we need to be doing, Chair, is that to deal with the fact that there could be people out there owing a child a common law duty of support, is the fact that as the foster care grant order is granted, you need to also to say, but who owes this child a common law duty of support? And inform the court and say to the court, this person has it. And then you ask the court to issue a contribution order because it's like an ordinary maintenance, which means we accept the fact that the contribution that the state is making is insufficient. And we are saying, if you are a father sitting somewhere who is supposed to be maintaining this child, then you must also make a contribution in addition to what the state would be contributing. I'm not sure, Chair, whether I can answer some of the questions which were raised earlier or you want to follow up. Okay. Chair, there was another question relating to the abandonment of children. The question was, what do you do if the child is... Okay, let's first start with the one relating to if you have adopted a child and you pass on, and what happens to that child? You have to go back to the consequences of an adoption order. That child must be treated like any other child or anyone who would have been your child. Which then means once you've adopted a child, that child will have the right to inherit from you, like your biological children. So you can't be excluded from inheriting from the adoptive parent, even if your children may feel otherwise. The law is very clear that this is your child and you must inherit like any other child. But maybe what we also need to advise South Africans is to ensure that you draw up the will, because it does assist. Because once you pass on, people start raising all these things. But the best thing is to have a will. But even if you do not have a will, this child will still inherit like any other of any of your children. I think the question was, although I think the question was answered by Mr. Magansela around the child was being abandoned. I think this one was responded to. There was another question relating to the child who needs to find out. Let's say, well, once the child has been adopted, now the child wants to find out, who are my biological parents? The age, once you reach the age of 18, and my colleagues may enter, and you want to find out who are your biological parents, then the adoptive parent must also give consent. Or if, let me put it differently. If the biological parent wants to find out, or the child wants to find out who are my biological parents, there must be consent given. But you must first reach the age of 18. Then if all parties consent to the disclosure, then it can be done. I hope I...
Thank you very much, Chief. I think let me start off with the foreign children in the jails, the ISS question that you asked. part of the Department of Social Development's duties is to ensure that children that are in foreign territories are returned to South Africa if the parents are in jail, but it's on request by those the government to the department, to DIRCO, and then we then would put into place the ISS and the returning of minor children. We've had, as we talk at the moment, there are three sitting in Brazil that we need to bring return, and we are doing that in the next day or two. We will be going through to go and fetch those children. We've had a decline last year. There was, I don't even think there was one case, and now suddenly there's three cases. And it depends on the country, but it also depends on whether the mother who's been convicted and jailed is pregnant at that time. With the Brazilian law, we've got to remove those children immediately as the child turns two, and we've got to remove them within a three-month period before they get placed into the Brazilian care system. So we give this as high priority, and we return the children. We do all the investigation because we've got to go to the courts in Sao Paulo and explain what the position of the receiving possibility of a foster parent here in South Africa, and also that that child is taken care of. But we do take into consideration family first. And that is the other one on response to Gumtree. There was a statement that the minister did put out regarding this Gumtree episode, and it certainly it's not what we would encourage in the least bit. The Act prevents the sale of any child for the purpose of adoption. It allows for advertisement in the Act, but it says it's a child protection organization that can advertise for recruitment purposes, certainly not the biological mother as in this situation. We have responded to that case and explained the process. And what it does say a lot about is the fact that people are not aware that this is a criminal process if you are embarking on selling of children. And that we, in the media brief that we sent out, we gave the option for instance, for how you can go about putting your child up for adoption and what would be the requirements, etc., so as to prevent situations like this arising. We have seen the second case as well, and it's very troublesome that the use of electronic media in terms of how children are being advertised at the moment. But I've just checked on advertisements 109, section 109, I think the regulation. A child protection organization accredited to provide adoption services may, for purposes of recruitment, publish advertisements in one national newspaper and one local newspaper circulating in the area where such organization has its business premises. So it doesn't allow you to put it in, for instance, national newspapers, etc. And what is very obvious is that when we wrote this, we were the use of the electronic media wasn't a very high priority at that point, and we may have to look at that in terms of the way we are proposing the changes for the Act. International agreements, do we follow up? I think very clearly we've had the one case, Baby Ruth with Wandisa, and there has been follow up, and the new Act has allowed for that to happen. Because previously in the old Act, there wasn't a provision made for follow up after adoption it was finished. There was no follow up. You can now follow up in terms of a post adoption agreement up to 6 months to see that that child has settled. We are aware that it was in Baby Ruth's case that ended very well in terms of the second adoption that she has gone through. And unfortunately, the day we went to Wandisa to do a monitoring and evaluation, the adoptive parents were there the night before. So so we weren't able to communicate with them. But what we are saying is that there are definite instances where we would, for instance, ask for an adoption, post-adoption agreement if we're not very happy with a particular situation. But it's on request. It's not an automatic thing.
Maybe, if I may, just to emphasize that is why it is so crucial that the organization that we work with are organizations that we have a full understanding with, and also that they also discharge that locally in that country those kinds of responsibilities. So the arrangement that we have between ourselves and other countries on that very same issue that becomes very, very crucial.
The second issue was about some of the challenges that we have with international countries and non-disclosure. I think that one has been, and the issue of the origin search. Just to say that we do origin searches, as Mr. Porcelet Felicello has stated. We do the origin searches, and it's on request, but there are certain requirements for us to do an on origin search. And in some instances, it's the most traumatic experience for either the adoptive child, or in this case it's an adult, because after the age of 18 they can then come through, and or for the person that is either the biological parent that is searching for the adoptive child, because you've got to get permission before you give it out. And this is where a lot of our issues are coming through, and rather hard for processes. But we try as much as possible, unfortunately, to stick to the Act, because that is the only real yardstick that we can use. The decline in adoption. It has been a very worrisome process that the adoptions have declined since the new Act. But this is partly due to the new Act. For instance, they've put in many more processes, and part of it was to ensure that the type of adoptions that we do are quality adoptions, and that it's not just being done for the sake of moving children out of the country or moving children into adoption. And also, the whole process, the court process, has expanded dramatically in terms of the requirements. For instance, you need to get a free and order. You need to get various things that before you can even consider adoption. And this has slowed down the process of adoption. I personally think that the one purpose of also some of these issues was that we would have less inter-country adoptions than national adoptions. And that has absolutely worked. We have more national adoption than inter-country adoption. That means that we keep our children within the country and we provide for them. I agree, it is totally not the numbers of children coming through. And I will deal with Mr. Waters' process, because it's a similar question about the decline in adoption. Honorable Waters, my apologies, the decline in adoption. And I think I've spoken about some of the reasons, and we can go into many more. But also, the issue of the numbers on RACAP and placing children on RACAP has definitely added to the slowing down process, because there's an expectation that you place children there for 60 days before the child is then freed up for either further or is being matched, or else freed up for international adoption. And there's a process, and I'll ask Kinsey if she wouldn't mind just, Ms. Ratsabisi, just to explain that process of the Article 17. Kinsey?
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, we do
Okay, where adoptable children are placed on RACAP, and the prospective adoptive parents. So children are placed on RACAP for a period of 60 60 days. For the both child protection organization to do the matching with the prospective adoptive parent. You find that the child cannot be adopted nationally and the period of 6 years expires. 60 days, sorry, the period of 60 days expires. In the case where the 60 days expires, that child is then considered for inter-country adoption. But for inter-country adoption, the child protection organization has to submit a report to the central authority where we look into this report to see to it that all the efforts were made to place the child locally. And if we agree and see in the report that, yes, this child, all the efforts were made, we accept the report and we issue Article 17. The Article 17 is a report that we submit to the Child Protection Organization with a report that was submitted to say, yes, approval has been made for the child to be adopted internationally. And that Article 17 letter and the report are submitted in court for inter-country adoption. Thank you.
Can I speak to the accreditation process?
Could we, through you, Chair, please, could we expand a bit really on the number of 508? Because it does seem low in terms of what could be the factors behind that. I mean, is it issues of awareness generally, or what could? Yes, ma'am. The list of adoptable children, 518, that's currently on the register, as indicated, is indeed. So we need to be able to outline what kind of challenges that we are also having at the Department of Justice.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Masasila. I think the whole issue of the RECAP and the numbers, the 508 adoptable children and the 237 prospective adoptive parents, there are particular rules for placing children on RECAP. And some of the challenges that we've got has got to do with the issue of how organizations, child protection organizations, and their willingness to place children on RECAP for matching purposes. There's been some instances where they just have not placed children. And as it stands on RECAP, it says that children may be placed. It doesn't say that all children must. So there is that provision in the Act which allows for a bit of discretion on the part of the child protection organization. And we're hoping, and again, that has definitely hampered the number of kids coming on the adoptable children register. We send out this register on a monthly basis to all child protection organizations to improve the movement of the children off the register and also to improve the matching. There's another issue regarding there's an issue around permanent residency. And I think that at the moment, and I'll ask again to just check that one, because we are having an issue around somebody that wants to adopt that's not a permanent resident of South Africa. The RECAP says they should be a permanent residency, but other parts in the Act does not make provision for that. And that is one of the issues that we intend also looking at in terms of the amendments to the Children's Act and how to deal with it, because there is an inconsistency there. So it's about the matching, it's about the department, the child protection organization's willingness to network with other organizations, and they would, for instance, say to us that they've got a matched parent or a matched child. In the meantime, they don't have it, but they're holding on. Sometimes it's financial reasons, because when you do adoptions, there's a financial aspect to it. And in other times, it's just pure, they're not prepared to share. So we're trying very hard to break that process of individualism and try and get a sense of collectivism for the best interest of children.
The question that Ms. Davis raised relating to the permanent residence has to do with the when you want to do a national adoption, there are certain requirements that you must comply with, that you must either be a South African citizen or a permanent resident. But in the specific case that she's referring to dealt with a person who was a non-South African resident and who neither was a South African citizen. However, this person wanted to adopt as if he meets the requirements of a national adoption. And this person was advised to apply for a South African permanent resident status and was unwilling, which means the type of adoption that this person would have wanted to apply for would value between the intercountry and the national adoption, which is not permissible. You must either be applying for a national adoption or intercountry adoption. This person did not meet the requirements of a national adoption and wanted to adopt as if apply as if he met the requirements of a national adoption. And this is where the challenge was, that we could not allow such an adoption to take place, because it will then mean once it is done as if it's a national adoption, this person can decide to go out of the country with a child, and there will be no follow-up required because it is not an inter-country adoption. The other question that I think was asked by one honorable member related to whether or not grandparents are allowed to adopt children. The Act is very clear. It sets out the people who can apply for adoption. And say for the fact that if it's a national adoption, you must be a permanent resident or a South African citizen and be over the age of 18 years. As long as you're a fit and proper person, it does not matter whether or not you're a grandparent or sister or a brother. If you meet the requirement, you'll be allowed to adopt a child, regardless of your relationship.
Quite a I'm going to deal with that. Thanks. Thank you very much, Honourable Chair. Honourable Waters asked about accreditation given the crisis. We, Honourable Waters, we have accredited, as I said. Those are the numbers that are up there. And I think we've made our new organization has been accredited to do adoption. And one of our problems regarding the, I'm going to speak to the numbers that you queried about, has to do with the human resources. And our standpoint is that, and I think this also talks to the decline in the number of adoptions, that adoption is of a complex nature, and that we require social workers that are highly competent staff, and it is definitely not just at an entry level. You're making a permanent decision for a child's life, and it goes for a child for the rest of his life. I think it differs from foster care, in that foster care is a semi-permanent, it's a temporary arrangement, and the child can move in or out of foster care as the circumstances change. Adoption is not one of those processes. And we hope that the major numbers of adoption services are performed by non-government social workers. And in the past, the Children's Act did not allow for, the Child Care Act did not allow for state social workers to render adoption. Especially the non-disclosure type adoptions. We rendered private disclosure adoptions or open adoptions. And as a result, the expertise and the skill really does not lie within the state sector. Part of what we are doing is trying to capacitate them and also ensuring that the adoption practice is understood by all that deal with us. The problem that we're having within the state social workers to be accredited is that there are two sections in the Act, and the one part of the Act says that they can be accredited, and another part of the Act says they're not a child protection organization, nor are they specialized adoption social worker. So there are serious inhibitions which prevents some of the state social workers providing for it. In some instances, we've got courts that allow those social workers in the state, even with the current legislation, to provide the adoption report. And in other instances, they are preventing us from doing it. So that's the reason why it's there in the Act. And it's as a result of practice, Honourable Waters, that we've picked up the issue. It has taken some time, but it's as a result of the crisis that's beginning to arise within adoption, where initially we didn't have that problem, but after 2-3 years of practice of the new Act, it has become a challenge, and we are looking at that as a change to the Act. The accreditation of organizations that deal with special needs. We have moved to whereby we've got to accredit organizations that deal with the adoption, national adoption and international adoption. We've taken all aspects. When we say children, we mean children with special needs and children without special needs. There should not be a distinction if we're looking at our inclusion principle of special needs. But we are aware that the type of child that has special needs, which could be a child that is medically has a medical problem, an older child, a child that has got a physical problem, a child that's got an intellectual problem, and we are aware that those are the ones that require additional effort rather than a special policy, but additional effort from the organizations that are dealing with it. We've got a couple of organizations that do specialize in special needs children, and we are looking at, for instance, the extension of one organization to deal further on special needs. But our first priority is in to ensure that the hard-to-place child is provided for. But it's very difficult sometimes to give one organization over the other a particular, to give them preference. But understanding that the way we work and practice is that a child with special needs should be given first preference at any rate. The whole issue of ABBA and discrimination. Honourable Waters, we've done a monitoring and evaluation of ABBA, as we've done. We've spoken about four child protection organisations that we've completed our M&E on. ABBA was one of them. We found out that on their website, they have these particular conditions. We've asked them to remove it because we've explained to them that our first priority is a non-discriminatory principle, and that we cannot have, despite the fact that they come from a Christian perspective or religious perspective, let me put it that way, because there's a lot of others that also deal with a similar type of thing. We cannot discriminate against anybody else. We discovered that the working agreement with their partner organization had also had a discriminatory principle, and we've now not encouraged that particular working agreement. We've actually asked them to withdraw it. But we've dealt with EBA in terms of the of our constitution. They have sent us a new policy which has removed that discriminatory principle. I'm not 100% certain why it's still on the website, despite the fact that they gave us a policy. And we went and did a M&E after the amount of complaints that we had about EBA services. What we've also done is that we've ensured that EBA, that we've taken away some of the working agreements that EBA has had. So instead of them having, I think they had about seven at one point, they are now down to five. So we've removed two of the countries that they're working agreements with, particularly, and we are looking at the whole accreditation of that, rather the whole working agreement, who has what country that they have working agreements of, and we're trying as much as possible to make sure that there is an even spread. What we did find out is that the more established child protection organizations have more of the working agreements at an international level. So we have been doing some of those aspects. The one that we that I know that was one of the questions in the parliamentary question, the one with the Netherlands and Wandisa, as it stands today, was the agreed day that we were going to interact with that particular organization. And I'm sitting here, and we had a telecon organized for 10 o'clock this morning, and I found out afterwards when the date was moved, and I've asked them to carry on. But it's also to deal with special needs, non-discrimination, same-sex marriages, it's all those issues. And one of the things, again, that we're putting forward to is to say, in no uncertain terms, we do not discriminate. So we will be dealing with that in the course of today. Specialized units in the provinces. Honourable Member has to deal with the fact, as I've explained, historically adoption wasn't part of what the services offered by the State Department and the provincial offices particularly. So what we are saying is that you cannot carry on with generic generalist work at the level of the entry level of the provinces. For instance, at that level they will do foster care, child and youth care, family care, substance abuse. They will do everything. Whereas we are asking for a very specific number of trained, highly trained social workers that will be part of that specialized unit. And that's in the hope of boosting the number of adoptions that the state can do, and ensuring that the numbers then would increase. The issues of the promotion and awareness. It is a problem, Honourable Member, of certain communities where there are certain practices, and we've had a very good interaction with the Commission on, I think it's on culture. I'm just trying to think of the full name. But we've had a very good interaction on that regarding the cultural practices, in particularly in some instances in the black communities, in the Indian communities, and how does that affect adoption. And part of it being that in some instances the communities say if the mother dies today and there's no further, that becomes part of the family. It's a part of the family. And therefore, do they really need to go through a whole legal process of adoption? So it's these debates that we're having. That's why we've gone to the traditional leaders, to say to them, because that is where the problem lies, to say to them, how can you assist us to explain that as much as possible, as much as we understand the cultural elements of taking on somebody else's child, there is legal aspects that we need to also abide by. And I think that we've been doing quite a bit of work with the House of Traditional Leaders, and there's been a change in some of the attitudes. We have not completed that process. I did say it's ongoing. and for the other provinces that we have not gone to, it's part of the CS plan. So we hopefully would have completed them. But it's a very intensive amount of public awareness. It's not just handing out pamphlets. It's really dialogue with communities, because this is the type of position that they have. They don't need a piece of paper to tell them that the child is theirs, and this is what they will tell you. So it's been quite an uphill battle in terms of that. But I think in many instances, the DG has stated in his opening address, there are pros and cons to adoption, and the benefits needs to be spelled out in much greater, especially to communities who have particular adoption and religious practice which impacts on adoption. The last issue was about, I did say that we would be completing other cases, other provinces. Spoken about the abandonment, the special needs act. I've explained the whole accreditation process and the special needs process. Thank you very much, Honourable Chair. I think I've covered, hopefully I've covered all the questions that have been asked.
No, thank you. You have, Mrs. David. Thank you very much for this input. It's quite informative, especially when you deal with these issues on a daily basis. So I think it's something that members can also apply in the constituency, in their work, but also in terms of the oversight role. But thank you very much, Honourable Members. Thank you very much for the Department of Social Development for coming here today and making this presentation. The meeting's adjourned.